Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Brought to you by the 2012 Toyota Camry.
Get in touch with technology with tech stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there!
Yes, and our story starts long, long ago when a single-celled organism developed into the first web browser.
Yeah, so, you know, there's this guy, Tim Berners-Lee, works over at CERN.
I feel like I've heard his name.
Dude came up with this neat way of displaying information using network connections, which would eventually blossom into the beautiful flower we know as the World Wide Web. Although we probably don't call it that so frequently anymore. Although if you read like the stuff from the early 90s, World Wide Web and Information Superhighway, they seem to be required in every single news story.
Yeah, well, we've started a little loopy here, but yeah, it's clear, and we haven't mentioned it in quite some time, but we have mentioned it on multiple occasions that the internet is basically a medium of communication between computers.
Right.
It's a network of networks. Your computer hooks up to the internet, and you can send information in a number of different ways. A lot of them are passé now, or less used than others. I mean, people like Gopher are using transmission protocols like Gopher and WACE. People just don't do that very much. Usenet is less used than it used to be.
Still got
email
people,
is certainly used quite a bit.
And still quite a few people are using file transfer protocol.
Sure, sure. The different instant messenger protocols, none of these are the World Wide Web. The World Wide Web basically puts a very public, pretty face on it.
Yeah.
In some cases, less than pretty, especially if you don't like crawling graphics and MIDI files.
No, but this is the old, this is the user-friendly version of what the internet has to offer. For a lot of people, they thought the World Wide Web and internet were synonymous. Not really the case, but we wanted to talk about a particular browser and a company, an organization that helped bring this browser about and how it kind of became a power player. Actually, it was the power player for a while, or an ancestor of it was, and then it faded to obscurity and rose from the ashes. But we'll get into that. So we're talking about Firefox in general. But to understand Firefox and the story behind Firefox, you actually have to go back quite a ways, well before there was ever any sort of Firefox web browser. So all the way back to 1992. And in 92, we're talking the earliest days of the web at this point.
And it seems kind of crazy. I mean, we're recording this in 2012, so that's, you know, just 20 years.
Yeah.
But a fellow by the name of Mark Andreessen.
Yep.
Basically, this was a college project.
Yeah, he and Eric Bina, or Bina, I'm not sure how to say his last name. Yeah, they began to work on a browser for X Windows on Unix computers.
Mm-hmm.
And this was something they decided to start working on this after being shown the work that Tim Berners-Lee had been doing over at CERN. And they said, wow, you know, we should start creating a browser that could access this sort of stuff. And so they worked together and they created something they called Mosaic, which was one of the earliest web browsers.
Yeah, and it really sort of helped popularize the World Wide Web for a lot of people. For a couple of reasons. One, it was reasonably nice to look at. It was easy to use. But it was also free.
Yep.
Because it was, again, a college project. So it was one of those things that was just offered. Now, you kind of had to know where to find it. You kind of had to have an idea what the World Wide Web was. And at that point, it was, sort of a hobbyist thing. I used BitNet. Back in the days immediately preceding that, I was using basically email, using chat, but I really had no idea what the web was. And I started doing some reading around that time and said, oh, this looks kind of interesting. I didn't have a web client for my Amiga at the time, but I started using Macs around that time and found out that there was a version of Mosaic available for it, which I actually purchased with a book. That told you how to use the darn thing, and it came on a floppy disk, and so I loaded Mosaic from that and got started on the web.
Yeah, some interesting connections we should talk about. I mean, you're going to find out that there are a lot of connections to various web browsers out there just coming from Mosaic. One of the earliest and, to me, really interesting ones is that in 1994, a company called Spyglass Incorporated licensed the Mosaic browser.
Yeah.
And they began to develop its own code base based on Mosaic. And then they licensed that code base to Microsoft. And that would become part of what would eventually be Internet Explorer.
Mm-hmm.
So Mosaic and Internet Explorer share some code when you go way, 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 way back.
Yeah.
And it's, that's a very interesting thing, especially when you look later on down the timeline of the evolution of browsers out there on the market.
Yeah, yeah. Now, of course, that's less of a direct lineage than what Andreessen and company would do when they decided to go ahead and make some money off of this thing, which was the founding of the company Netscape.
Yeah, first it was called Mosaic Communications, but they renamed it before too long to Netscape Communications, they being Mark Andreessen and Jim Clark. This was in 1994, so same year that Spyglass Incorporated is licensing Mosaic itself. And they come up with the browser Netscape, and this was a pay-for browser. You would buy the browser.
I bought a copy off the shelf, shrink-wrapped copy of Netscape 2.
And it became
Netscape Communicator.
It actually became quite popular, and Navigator. Yeah, there were a lot of. Do you want to go back?
No.
Well, okay, we'll just keep going then.
All right.
Hey, guess what, guys? Sometimes we go back. Anyway, Netscape was the. It's very rare, though.
I remember. I remember the little window in the right upper right part of the screen, which, you know, if you've used the web for a while, you remember the little thing that would tell you that it's actually working.
Yeah.
Which wasn't the thing from left to right in the navigation bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
The address bar, I guess. But yeah, back in Netscape Navigator days, they had an old ship's wheel. That was so nice.
We call that the helm. Anyway, the browser became popular. It kind of, it introduced a concept called extensions. which most people are familiar with these days, extensions extend the features of a browser by letting you install some new code that gives it some added functionality.
Mm-hmm.
This gave websites or people who were developing websites the ability to include stuff that wasn't natively supported by HTML, because the browsers were able to interpret the new code and render it properly on the screen so that you're getting the experience that the people wanted you to have,
mm-hmm.
the people being the web developers. And around that time, the early 90s, Netscape was doing really well. In fact, it might have had a market share as high as 80% of the browser market at that time. And that's pretty remarkable considering that it was a pay-for browser.
Yeah. Yeah. At that point, Netscape was riding very high in the market. You know, of course, they were competing with online service providers like AOL and CompuServe. But the web basically was Netscape's to lose.
Yeah. And boy, 1995.
Yeah.
The beginning of the end.
Well, yeah.
Netscape.
Now, see, when you're talking about the possibility of paying, you know, $20, $30, $40 for your web browser versus a competitor that comes along and offers one for free.
Yeah.
That's freely downloadable and has the muscle of somebody really big behind it. Like, oh, I don't know, Microsoft.
Like Steve Ballmer. It's a big guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 95, Microsoft launches Windows 95, and it has the web browser that's included with Windows 95 is Internet Explorer. Now, remember, Internet Explorer was built partially upon that code base from Mosaic. And it was, as Chris was saying, free of charge. You could download it freely and use it yourself, so you didn't have to buy a copy of a browser.
And it even came with Windows 95,
yeah.
so you didn't even have to bother with Netscape.
Right, right. If you bought a new computer, then you had Internet Explorer built right in there. In fact, that ended up causing some problems. There were some issues about Internet Explorer being tied so tightly into the operating system experience on Windows that it brought up some antitrust issues for Microsoft down the line. But that's really more of a Internet Explorer story, not so much a Firefox story. So
right.
Let's go back over to what's going on. It took some time, but Internet Explorer, even though it was free, I mean, it did not immediately take over. Like it wasn't an overnight, you know, turnaround. It took about four generations of Internet Explorer for it to catch up to Netscape.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Netscape branched out. They did more than just use Netscape Navigator. They also wanted to create an entire suite of tools that you would use for email and for Usenet and some of the other stuff. And they built a larger suite. So you had an option. You could go with Netscape Navigator if you just wanted to use the web, or a suite that they called Netscape Communicator,
mm-hmm.
Which had the greater functionality. Unfortunately, in doing this, they gradually, and this is common, you know, this happened to Microsoft and many, many others, the code gradually became more bloated.
Right.
More resource intensive, if you will, and made load time slower, made things more difficult. So now you have a heavyweight, internet heavyweight in Netscape going against the net newbie Microsoft, but Microsoft has the leaner, more integrated browser in this case.
Yep.
And again, free.
So yeah, by that fourth generation of Internet Explorer, we started to see things switch around to the point where it was clear that Internet Explorer was going to run away with it. So in 1998, Netscape Communications made a big decision.
Yes.
They decided that they would offer Netscape, the Netscape browser, for free.
Yes.
And that they would freely offer up the source code so that it would become an open source project. So this, in other words, you could be a developer and go in and you could tweak Netscape and have your own version of Netscape, and under the right, you know, you had to follow certain rules, but you could do that. The community very quickly became huge, and there was a new name for this project. It was called the Mozilla Project.
Yes. Now, I understand that the name for Mozilla came from, it's sort of a fudged portmanteau, which is a combination of words for mosaic killer or mosaic killer.
No.
Of course, that took on the form of a dinosaur because it makes people the name Mozilla makes people think of Godzilla.
Right.
So they, of course, didn't want, I'm sure, copyright infringement. So Mozilla's dinosaur monster lizard giant thing is red instead of green and really bears no resemblance to Godzilla, although the
it's more like a Tyrannosaurus or maybe a Velociraptor.
Yes. Now there have also been multiple incarnations of the design for the critter,
right.
But yeah.
So
that looks nothing like a Firefox.
The Mozilla,
we'll get into that.
Right. The Mozilla project launches in 1998, but it would not be until 2002 before they released Mozilla 1.0. And this was a browser that included email client functionality, among other features. But at that point, Internet Explorer was dominant in the market. It had a 90% market share. So we're talking about a time where, you know, we went from 94 or so, where Netscape had about 80% market share.
Right.
To 2002, where IE now has 90% of the market share. So this is a good thing to point out. Things change.
Really?
Yeah. Market share can change dramatically from one decade to the next, or even in just the span of a few years. The reason why that's important to remember is that we always talk about market share as if it's the most important thing in the world in
yeah.
some cases, like, you know, talk about in smartphone adoption or whatever. But it's true that these things can change dramatically, and someone who's on top and you would think, oh, this guy's going to dominate the market forever, could very easily become an also-ran in just a few years.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
And everything is relative, too, if I may step on a very small soapbox. It only has room for one bar of soap in it. But, yeah, I mean, people talk about the fill-in-the-blank here killer. And, you know, those long-term listeners will remember that I brought this up before. It drives me crazy when people talk about the fill-in-the-blank killer because In just a few years, they'll be talking about whatever that was killer.
Right.
And in some cases, they don't kill so much as carve out a niche market and go for it. I mean, you know, in this case, Internet Explorer would have been the Netscape killer, and in some cases they did. But Mozilla would come back and carve out its own space, and then Chrome came along years later, and it is, you know, that's sort of what's going on right now at the time.
Same as it ever was. Yeah. Same as it ever was.
So, go ahead.
I was just going to say some community members of Mozilla. What's interesting is you've got the Mozilla project, you've got the Mozilla browser. You still have people in the community who don't necessarily think that the way that the Mozilla browser is developing is the right way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of having an open source community, is that there's not necessarily just one path that you can take. You can have multiple paths to try and create the best browser experience possible.
Yes.
Some of those community members decided that there were some issues they had with Mozilla. One of them was that they felt that it was suffering from feature creep, which is the same thing we were talking about with
Netscape. He's scary, man. That feature creep.
Yeah, he turns into like Dracula and then Mummy and then the Creature from the Black Lagoon. And I've been watching too much Supernatural lately. I just watched an episode last night that was about that. Anyway, no, the idea that they were, again, Mozilla was starting to become, in their mind, bloated
yeah.
the way Netscape had. And they did not really think that that was something they should pursue. They thought that perhaps they should take the code and make something else out of it. So this group created a browser that they called Phoenix.
Mm-hmm. As in rising from the ashes.
Right. Now there were
the legendary bird that
yeah.
rises
yes.
from the ashes.
Yes, the one that was featured heavily in the documentary series Harry Potter.
But it is a fitting image for this browser, which at one time had been Netscape.
Right. So,
sort of.
So Phoenix rises from the ashes, but also tends to fall again because it turns out someone else has the name Phoenix, so they can't really use it. So they renamed it Firebird. That caused a problem because there was another organization that used the word Firebird about distributed software. So that was an issue. They ended up thinking, okay, we'll name it something else. We'll call it Firefox.
Yeah, now Firefox has the benefit here of going with the fire part at the beginning, but adds another very cool animal image in there. Now, a Firefox isn't actually a fox. It is, in fact, a red panda, which, in my opinion, are really neat animals. But, you know, and actually recently, the Mozilla Foundation has sponsored the well-being of a couple red pandas in the Knoxville, Tennessee Zoo. They even had a webcam up, which had the little critters running around and playing.
And sleeping.
Which they always seemed to be doing right as I tuned in. Oh, look, there's
and
nothing
they're settling,
going on.
Settling down for a nap. Yeah, in 2003 was when Mozilla created the Mozilla Foundation, which is an independent nonprofit organization. It's mainly meant to manage the daily operations of the Mozilla project.
Yeah, and we didn't really touch on this, but the remnants of Netscape were purchased by America Online.
Yes.
So AOL bought Netscape, but the Mozilla Foundation has the ability to go off and do their own thing here. So they have.
Yeah. Yeah. So 2004 was when Firefox 1.0 was released. And it became a very popular browser very quickly. In less than a year, they had over 100 million downloads. So Firefox was quickly kind of viewed as the alternative to Internet Explorer.
Yep.
I can hear all the Opera fans out there screaming at me, but you know, that's the popular view was that Firefox, if you didn't want to use Internet Explorer, you should use Firefox.
Yeah. Now I had actually been using Opera up until that point.
Right.
As I specifically remember a friend of mine going, "Hey, you know, I know you like Opera, but you really should try this Firefox out." And I was kind of skeptical because I was one of the people who was cranky at Netscape for getting so darn bloated.
Yeah.
I tried Netscape Communicator for a long time and it just drove me crazy. And I didn't like Internet Explorer for the Mac very much. So, once I tried it, I got hooked.
But yeah.
I still use Opera from time to time.
Give you guys some reference. 2004, that's around the same time that companies like MySpace and Facebook are starting to to make a name for themselves. Of course, at that point, Facebook is strictly a college-only experience.
Right.
But yeah, that gives you an idea of what's going on around that time. It would be 2 years before version 2.0 of Firefox came out. They would update. They made lots of frequent updates to the Firefox browser, but they were all very incremental without major changes to the code.
Point releases, you might say.
So it wasn't until, it was 2 years after it had debuted before 2.0 came out. And it was another 2 years when version 3.0 came out. So that was 2008. The reason why I'm bringing this up is it'll be interesting when we get to talk about what version is currently out in the wild right now as of the recording of this podcast.
Right.
But yeah, 2008 was when version 3.0 was released and Firefox hit 20% of the market share.
Now, I'd like to bring this up because the Mozilla Foundation does a lot more than just Firefox.
And pandas.
And pandas. Red pandas. They're so cute. they also had split off some of the other code that was part of Communicator. For example, Thunderbird, which is their email client, is sort of the version that that used to be the mail client, and there was a unified, basically the derivative of Communicator itself, the suite, which was called SeaMonkey, they released early versions of that. Thunderbird 1.0 came out on December 7th, 2004, and SeaMonkey 1.0 came out on January 30th, 2006. Now, both of these are probably not as much in the public eye. Thunderbird more so, but SeaMonkey certainly not as much as either one of those two. But they still do work on those projects. And over time, I just wanted to make sure that we mention them, but over time, Mozilla has brought Thunderbird up to the same, basically the same version system that Firefox is on.
Right.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices. And that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM. Let's create.
Well, 2011, we have Firefox version 4.0 released. I remember that was a big deal.
It was.
Another one that came out. And then, so between 2011 and today, this being the end of November 2012 when we mm-hmm. record this, they got busy. So,
and this is Google's fault.
We're seeing every couple of years, we're seeing a new version of Firefox, a new version number, like
yes.
1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4. So you would expect that maybe the next, you know, version 5.0 of Firefox would probably come out in 2013 or so. Not the case. The Firefox operating system, or not operating system, but browser, we'll get to the operating system in a second, is currently at version 17
mm-hmm.
as of the recording of this podcast. So between 2011 and November 2012, we went from version 4 all the way up to 17. And actually, versions 18 and 19 are both in alpha testing right now.
That is correct. And if you're interested, you can download those versions, even a nightly build if you want.
Yeah.
Your yeah. mileage may vary.
Yeah, day by day, these browsers are changing. And some of them may not be what we like to call stable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it just shows the massive amounts of change that have come out over the last year.
Yeah. Now, what influenced that? It was Google with the Chrome browser, which came out. And again, Google has a lot of resources that it can give to the Google Chrome project, which itself is a derivative of Chromium. Google Chrome came out and started updating very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And the folks at the Mozilla Foundation realized that in terms of new features being added, Chrome was outdoing Mozilla quite rapidly. So they decided to put themselves on a rapid release cycle too, which frustrated a lot of people because Firefox, more so than Chrome, has been the standard by which companies operate, Internet Explorer or Firefox. You know, not Safari, not Opera, not Chrome.
Yep.
And so they've been on a scale that's not as fast as Chrome, but they did start making updates more quickly and much more quickly than they used to be. And now they're on a sort of a cycle where they're releasing a couple, maybe three updates a year.
Yeah, it's
maybe
pretty,
a little faster.
Pretty dramatic, yeah, to go from 4 to 17, have 13 major releases within the span of like a year and a half, really.
But the releases seem to be on a more level schedule
yeah,
now than
yeah.
they had been.
Yeah, they're playing catch up for quite some time. In October 5th, 2012, they released the Firefox build that can be used in the Windows 8 user interface. That's that tiled interface that was formerly called Metro.
Mm-hmm.
So that came out toward the end of 2012. Also, they're working on a smartphone operating system.
Yes.
That's kind of an interesting thing to build an OS for phones to really get into that market. I mean, we're already talking about a market that's mainly being fought by Google and Apple, with Windows trying to make a name for itself as well at that same time. And then other players like BlackBerry are trying to, you know, regroup. And some like Symbian are almost gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, and it's interesting too, because like what Google is doing with its operating system, the Chrome OS, Firefox OS is also leaning heavily on web standards
yeah.
for its programming. So we're talking about HTML5, the newly proposed but not yet finalized version of the hypertext markup language, and a lot of the Mozilla specific APIs, application programming interfaces. Mm-hmm. Basically, these are plug and play pieces of code that people can use to make them compatible, intercompatible. Mozilla is basically saying, "Hey, look, we're open source, we're free, and you know we want to see if we can make inroads on people's smartphones, and people can use a Firefox OS simulator right now, where you can actually give it a try. Actually, the name for the simulator is R2D2B2G.
B2G, by the way, means boot to Gecko.
Yes, which was the original name. Gecko being the web interface or web engine that yeah. Firefox is built on. But yeah, they are a primarily web centric operating system.
Where does R2-D2 come from?
I don't know. I have no idea. Probably just something they made up.
It's weird because I would think those were not the droids I was looking for.
Entirely possible.
Anyway, yeah, so that brings us up to date with what's going on with Firefox. I've used Firefox quite a bit in the past, and it was, for a very long time, it was my browser of choice.
It's still my browser of choice.
Mine is Chrome.
I use Chrome. I still use Opera. I still use Safari from time to time.
I am what Molly Wood calls a Chrome puff.
But on the other hand, if you're still using IE6, please stop.
Yeah, please don't. Don't be that guy.
Stop.
Don't. Unless your computer literally cannot support any later version of Internet Explorer, don't be that guy. That brings us up to speed. So, guys, if you have any suggestions for future topics that we can tackle here at Tech Stuff, well, I have some suggestions for you. Write it down and send it to us in an email and address it to techstuff@discovery.com. Or let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by the 2012 Toyota Camry.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Badeda. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.